Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline starts now.
Hey everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. Again, that phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. And it's really my pleasure to welcome back Seth Green. Seth.
What a love fest we have, Drew.
Dude, it is. Listen, my love for you has grown orders of magnitude in recent weeks.
Oh, yeah?
For the reasons that I'm going to tell all our listeners. A, you were good enough to let me voice some characters for Robot Chicken.
And it was awesome. Guys, wait till you see Drew is hilarious.
this is where my ass kissing.
I got to get my face out of your ass.
No. Well, I don't see how it could be in my ass. My ass is going deeper into yours right now because... My face going into yours, that is. No, but listen. Because, and this is where I'm just going to begin my A-kissing, and that is that you and your partner, Matt, are really something to behold when you work. These guys sit, they put you in a sound booth, and these guys sit on the other side of a glass window, and they kind of look down at their computer screens while they're having you repeat lines over and over. And when they get the sound and the humor they want, they both rise out of their seat simultaneously with the exact same look on their face. It's really something to behold. So I thought, boy, that was pretty neat, watching them work like that. It was really a pleasure to see. But thanks, then Seth was good enough to... You don't even need to be here for this show, by the way. I'm just going to talk for a minute. Then he was good enough to invite me down to his empire, where Robot Chicken is conceived
our production
and
facility,
executed.
Yeah.
Really, and I remember, Seth, you talking about how much work it was to get this going when you first got going.
It takes a lot, yeah. It takes a village.
But I could realize, I remember you were distressed, and I kept thinking, it's a cartoon. What's he talking about? Man, when you go down there, let me just tell you, first of all, they have a village. And the first room they take you to is a room of men and women just making scenery. Little tiny scenery, like they're going to make a train set or something. I mean, dozens of people making scenery. Then you go to the next room, dozens of people making puppets, making dolls. Dolls with funky faces, dolls that move like Gumby, right? Gold and wine. And I got to meet the actual Robot Chicken and the Mad Professor at the beginning. They were good enough to show me that. Then they take you on
those props are holding up good, too. Those are like 2 years old, and they have been put through the ringer at this point.
Well, now that I was thinking, first of all, they should be in a lock and key. Somebody's going to rip that stuff off and sell it on eBay.
Yeah, some stuff is walk, but mostly, I mean, everybody that works on the show is so a part of making it. Everybody knows where stuff needs to be, and everybody's got the cause at the forefront of their
minds. That is immensely clear from everybody you talk to there. Everybody is into it and having fun and sort of...
Fiercely loyal crew.
You get that. I'm worried about somebody from the outside coming in and roaring through your drawers and stuff.
That's why the secret.
And I, by your drawers, I mean the cabinets and things. But anyway,
why I keep the Robot Chicken is in my drawers.
So the next thing is they take you to sort of a soundstage where there are, 14 separate sets, 12 separate sets?
Yeah, there are 14 separate sets that are about like 8 by 10 apiece.
And each of them are these scenes of Robot Chicken being acted, being frame by frame, sorted out by animators, where they, per day, produce 10 seconds at each
10
of those.
To 20, depending on the complication of the scene and the speed of the animator.
Which, apparently, by animation standards, is slave driving.
Very high,
Very high.
I talked to a guy that was making a stop-motion film when we were in the end of our production cycle, and we had about... 4 weeks left, and it was all animation heavy. We were going to get probably, I guess it's like 45 minutes, something like that. And I was talking to this other guy, and I said, how much you got left on your show? And he's like, we got 7 minutes. And I was like, oh my gosh, how long is that going to take? And he's like, the next 3 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but it's a whole different process. You're shooting for film, like the Nightmare Before Christmas. Those sets are so intense. The puppets are so big. The movement's so specific. And there's so many people in a scene. There's bunches of animators working on it. You know,
so somebody's responsible for each puppet and each tree and each fleck of snow kind of thing.
Different animator, but some of the shots are so complicated, that's why they take so long.
I see.
Well, whereas our stuff,
we watch pumpkins laughing at each other. Right?
Yeah, we try and keep it as simple as possible. Oh, yeah, we got an upcoming sketch about a couple of jack-o'-lanterns on a porch, and all of them have the personality of the visage that was carved for them. And one of them was carved and looks horrible, and the other pumpkins tease it about being retarded.
And my kids love your show. I mean, you just absolutely killed that demographic. Yeah, and
it's completely inappropriate for their age group.
It is, as I found out when your producer or one of your executives there aired the one of the episodes for them, and I was cringing. I got to tell you, but they loved it.
It's like Looney Tunes, so a lot of the dirty stuff goes over their heads.
Absolutely, none of it is explicit, which I appreciate, and it's just fun, and they have a good time with it, and they enjoy it. And this really marked them as sort of standing out relative to their peers because they had been on holy ground. They had been where Robot Chicken was created, and so just congratulations on all that. That really,
I love it, and I love, like I said, I love showing it off to people because it's so much work, but we all do it because we enjoy the show, and we enjoy working together, and we love what we're making, and ultimately, fans are reacting to it, which is making us feel justified in spending so much time and effort on it. But I love that you guys came down.
And I have no doubt when you show it off, people have the same reaction I do, which is like, oh, my God, this is incredible. I mean, there should be, like, tours of this thing. It really is something to behold. So congratulations.
Just get in the way of the work.
And if that, that's true. And if that were your only project, it would be sensational. But now we got Four Kings on NBC.
Not anymore.
Right?
Oh, no, man, we got canceled. I know, right, it was a hard break, but everybody's got jobs now, so.
This is probably a relief for you, in fact, with all the work you're doing. You've got Chris, of course, and the Family Guy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Four Kings, it's kind of bittersweet. I loved all the people that I was working with. I really did, but at the same time, I'm excited to have time off. Come July when we finish Robot Chicken, I don't have anything to do.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
But nothing
to
go
until
later in the
summer. Yeah, you'll be doing Austin Powers 12.
Sunscreeners work nonstop since he began in the business.
That's Seth reading his publicity material.
From 3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago. But I you know, it's so
I'm going to take a vacation. Not to get off topic, but that's my big plan. I'm going to take a vacation.
Good. Where are you going to go?
I don't know. Either the Caribbean or Hawaii or maybe 12 days in France.
Nice. You know, usually when people have a cancellation of a series, people are like, oh, yeah, that really, I'm so sorry. And I really feel bad for them. But
Drew,
you, I'm thinking,
25 years and counting, man. I'm showing no signs of stopping. This is what I do for my job.
Not only that, I'm just saying, look, this is a relief for you. Give me a break. We've got the Family Guy. We've got Robot Chicken. Named Best TV Actor in Entertainment Weekly. That's a pretty good deal, right?
That was when I was doing Buffy, though.
And I bet... What's the one that's been canceled that you thought was the most, I don't say disappointing, but sort of disappointing?
Well, disappointing was Greg the Bunny, because I took that show and I really wanted it to be what it had been on, like, Independent Film Channel.
I was actually hoping you were going to say that, because to me, that was the greatest disappointment.
I
wanted to
see
that take form. It was a great
show.
Me too,
and it was frustrating.
Sarah was great.
Yeah.
And you had Gina.
It was Dean Waters and Bob Gunton and
Eugene Levy in it. Yeah.
I mean, and me on. And Dan Milano and all the coolest puppeteers and some of the funniest characters.
Who did the theme song for that show?
That was a good show. And Sarah, I thought, chimed on that one. So.
Wait a minute. It's, I can't even.
Ween.
What?
Ween did it.
No, did
Ween.
They?
Ween, yeah, they did.
What? We're not hearing you. Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to Seth. You can't
Seth?
Hear Drew.
Oh, sorry. I was talking to the engineer.
I couldn't hear what he was saying.
Sorry, I was hearing something in my headphones. No, it was, I can't remember his name right now. I'm just going to be so embarrassed for it, but,
Who's that?
I can't remember his name. The guy
I
who
told
did
you,
the theme
Andrew,
song.
You can hear me now. Sorry.
The guy who did the theme song for, Greg the Bunny.
Ah.
Where it's
right,
dead
I'll tell
air.
You what.
I was trying to come up with it. I'll come up with it during a commercial.
Enough ass kissing. Let's get on with some calls here. Ready?
Thank you, sir. Let's hear what they have to say.
Okay. All right, this is Bob. What's up, Bob?
Hey there.
Hey, Bob.
I was talking to, this girl the other day. We have been on 3 dates so far. And we were kind of getting, like, a little into the conversation. It was a little graphic, I would say. And I was, like, specifically referring to me ejaculating. And she asked next time if we got into this conversation, if she could keep some of my semen with her for...
Wait. This is first date material?
No, this was after 3 dates, and now we were talking on the phone.
I hope you said, how dare you, and slammed down the phone.
Well, I was kind of into it. I don't know.
Seth, what do you think?
That's tough, you know, because it's an odd request by my standards, but at the same time, everybody's
even,
into all
even
sorts
by
of
your
stuff.
Standards.
You
even
know,
by Seth's
I mean, people get turned on by the strangest things, and who's to say it's not worthwhile? I'm always suspect of that. That's
yes.
all. That's it's kind of a suspicious request and desire.
Third date, man, I would be very careful with this one. It's bizarre. It's so bizarre, it almost makes me think like she's trying to screw with you. Like she just wants to see what she can get you to do, and she's going to tell all her friends, you never believe what Bob did.
Well, I wonder, that's an interesting take on it. Like, what if it's a push away tactic.
I think it's something.
You know what I mean? Like it's a see how far you can push somebody.
Yes, it's how to get rid of this
guy. How old is this girl?
Or, Bob?
How old is she?
She's 18.
Puts it into a little bit of perspective.
Yeah, I think...
You know what I mean? Kind of a freak, kind of a how hard can I freak you out phase in your life.
Are we going to get a mason jar follow-on here, Bob?
Yeah, she does want to keep it in a mason jar.
Mason jar, there we go. Okay.
Well,
thank you, buddy.
Yep, big fan.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it. Seth, you know the mason jar reference?
No, is this another story I should know?
It's a code for bogus call, basically.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and I could sort of feel it coming. If you put Bob on hold there, Anderson, I'd appreciate that. The deal is, we had a guy who used to call from Arizona all the time, and he would tell us these very elaborate stories. And at the very end, he'd get us pretty good. We'd be like, yeah, really? Oh, my God. And then he'd go, and you know what? Her anus was the size of a mason jar. We're like, what?
That was always his closer.
That was the payoff. And it was like, okay.
That's kind of like no soap radio. I mean, it's a pointless joke.
Right. And so eventually everybody who started calling in bogus calls would sort of use that as their code. If they got through the gates and into the call, when they started running out of steam, suddenly they bring up the mason jar. It's like, okay.
How proud he must be for starting a revolution.
Indeed. I appreciate that. Let's go to Michelle there, Anderson, if we could. She's on line 4.
Hello?
Michelle? Hey, Michelle. What's happening?
Hi. How's it going?
Good. You're on with Seth Green.
Hey, what's up? Hi, Seth. How's it going? Like you, too.
Oh, thanks.
Actually, I've been seeing this guy since September, and, like, up until about mid-January, like, we'd have sex, like, 4 or 5 times a day. Like, we'd wake up and have sex, like, after lunch, after dinner, you know, in bed, like, at night. And
how long have you been seeing him again?
Since September.
And how long did that sort of romance phase, like, that honeymoon? So about 6 months of that, basically.
Yeah, and, okay. You know, I thought he was going to keep up because that was a while already. And then, like, it became, like, you know, twice a day, then, like, once a day, every other day. And now it's, like, once a week. And, like, when it happens, it doesn't even feel like we're making love. It just feels like I'm, you know, like, just having sex. And, like, sometimes, like, I'll start to go down on him, and he'll just push me away and be like, I'm tired. I don't feel like it. What are you doing?
Uh-oh.
He's a crazy person.
And it just that's what... I don't get it. Like, I thought guys like that, and he's just like...
Guys totally like that.
Yet sometimes,
I'm certain of it.
But sometimes in a monogamous relationship with people, you know, under the age of 24, 22, you kind of run out of steam with the relationship, and you don't really know how to end it, and you're getting kind of frustrated with each other. And one of the places that will show up is certainly in the sexual relationship.
How old are you guys?
I'm 20. He's 32.
Oh, 32.
Why does he
hold on
say
a second?
Something like that.
Is he? Hang on. Does he? What does he work a lot?
A little bit. He works part time.
Totally suspect.
So yeah, Michelle. I first of all,
I'm 32.
Yeah.
I work all the time. You know exactly how hard I work.
Yeah.
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah.
I don't push my girlfriend away when she goes down on me.
See, that's what I don't get. So does it mean that he's like cheating on me or what?
No, it either means... Is he on medication?
No, he's not.
Did he do drugs and alcohol?
No.
Has he had any performance issues?
No.
Okay. I think it's that this thing is... Either he is old enough or smokes cigarettes or smokes pot or does something that's affected his libido and he's sort of just ashamed of dealing with that, or this thing is sort of running out of steam and he, for whatever reason, is not willing to end
it. I asked him that and he says, no, you know, we're still good. I just don't feel like it. I'm not in the mood.
Do you guys do other stuff in your relationship? Are you friends? Do you hang out? Do you, like, go to movies and party and stuff?
We go to movies. We go to the mall. We go to museums. We go to, like, all over the place.
What kind of work does this guy do?
He works with, like, older people. Like,
what the hell does that mean?
Like geriatric work in a hospital, volunteer?
He's a physician? He's
like in-home care.
Yeah. I don't know. This guy is suspect. He's 32.
That can be a totally depressing situation that makes you not the least bit turned on, especially if you work with people that pass away.
Wouldn't that make him a nurse, a male nurse?
Right. Why? He doesn't have a nursing credential?
No, he doesn't.
So he just does in-home care with old people. That's sort of a peculiar job, right?
For
a 32-year-old guy.
Have you checked his freezer or his cellar?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Don't say that, Seth. No, I mean, I don't know what's going on. I really don't. And it makes me feel bad because, like, I'll rush home from work, I'll shave and, you know, do all that kind of stuff, try to get sexy, and, you know, he comes home and he's just like, I want to watch the game.
I don't know.
That's his main problem, is he into sports.
Yeah, exactly.
Sports.
No, I just think this relationship is sort of wrapping up, and this is how this is manifesting right now.
You're 20 years old, and you sound really cool.
Yeah, here's the bottom line. He owes you an explanation. It's not nothing. You need to talk with him. He needs to tell you what the deal is, and that's that. I mean, there needs to be some sort of reciprocity here in this, and you can't be just flailing trying to figure it out for yourself with nothing from him when he's the one with the symptoms. He's got to tell you what's going on. Anderson, line one, Kelly. Kelly?
Hello.
Hi, Kelly. What's happening?
I just wanted to say that Seth Green was, like, my first celebrity crush ever.
Oh, thanks.
Nice. And what was he doing at the time? Which program was he on? Which of his many programs?
Buffy and watching Idle Hands and, like...
Wow, I got you on Idle Hands. That is
commitment. I
don't
know about
right
that one. What is Idle Hands? What was that?
I did this really silly horror movie. It was like a horror comedy, and it came out 2 days after Columbine. Totally got eaten alive.
Oh.
They're like, horror comedy. Timing. Kids are going to school and shooting people.
Timing.
How can you make that funny?
Oh my goodness.
Anyways, that's all.
But thank you so much.
That's very kind. And then Anderson, line two. Whoop. And line two.
Hello.
Hey, what's happening, buddy?
Hey. I'm 14 years old, and I have a girlfriend that's about the same age as me.
That sounds like a congratulatory situation.
Yeah. So, she will, like we have sex and everything. And
Wait, whoa. How old are you?
14.
14.
And she's how old?
14.
She's boy, that's
3 months older than I am.
Oh, that's different than why don't you say so. But no, that's very young to be having sex, right?
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
Hmm. All right, so what's your question?
Whenever, she won't let me go down on her whenever we're, like...
Seth?
She said it kind of bugs her.
Totally tough, man. Are we going to just speed past the age appropriate thing?
Well, we can kind of dance around a little bit.
It's tough, Drew, because I grew up and I was, I was.
Hey, I was there. You came on the show and talked about it. And freak Brenda out, your publicist, who still thinks about that.
I know. I can't throw stones, and I can't accuse somebody else of being too young for something that I went through at the same age. But I can say, especially at that age, it's a different kind of intimacy. Anything oral, and all girls have all different opinions about it, no matter what their age are. Some girls just don't like it. Some girls are just uncomfortable with it. It's just not their thing.
And there's a few reasons for that. I mean, again, we're sort of dancing around the age appropriateness of all this. The fact that it would be extremely intense for a 14-year-old to sort of be comfortable with this. But beyond the sort of feeling that, they're sort of unattractive or it's, guys won't like the experience, there is the fact that some women, again, those that tend to be more multi-orgasmic, don't like it. There are those women that actually find it sort of unpleasant, uncomfortable. And I know for the ones that can only orgasm via oral sex, that seems incomprehensible. But there is definitely that population out there. So, Anderson, I need you to put up the next call for me. I'm getting only busy signals from the computer at your end.
Oh,
here you go. This is
Seth?
This is Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Wait.
You're like awesome, dude.
Oh, thanks, man.
Shows.
Thank you very much. Be safe, man.
Here's Jenny.
Jenny?
Hello?
What's happening there?
Hi. I just want to say hi, Seth Green. I think you're really hot, and pretty much, I just want to say that.
That's
thanks,
it?
Jenny.
But no, I have more to say.
I thought it was just me that wanted to kiss
his
ass tonight.
That's what I'm
going to
lead with.
Anyways, if I recently got my clit pierced, and...
Well, how old are you?
17.
Oh, my God, who does that at 17? I don't mean so much the who does that to you, to a 17-year-old.
You have fake ID?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got my first tattoo when I was 17.
Yeah.
Where and what is it?
It was on my arm, and it's a thing a friend of mine gave me.
Nice. Okay, so go ahead, Jane.
If my girlfriend has her tongue pierced.
Oh, boy.
If, she, like...
Yes, you could get interlocked and get stuck there.
No, that's... No, if, she had, a tongue infection, her piercing was infected or something.
Can you transfer that infection?
Yeah.
It probably isn't the healthiest thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I wouldn't entirely recommend it. I'd totally let that infection clear up.
Okay.
Right. I mean, tongue infections can actually track down into the brain and become brain abscesses. That has been reported. So if she has an infection in the tongue, that's really quite a serious issue, and that needs to be dealt with. And doing things like... oral sex is going to be irritating to her and create that infection. I mean, have a higher probability of making that infection a complication like a brain abscess, number one. Number two, whatever bacteria have been growing there can be transmitted to your wound and over to even to the vagina. There are bacterial infections of the vagina. So
there
this whole thing's
is, there
a mess.
Is bacteria, Drew. She's calling from Berkeley.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
So she's probably a filthy girl.
Oh, what?
Anna.
Well, I
what
mean,
do you mean?
17, getting her clit pierced, going down on her girlfriend, living in Berkeley.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy.
You have dreadlocks, or does she have dreadlocks?
No.
How about pube locks?
No.
Nice, nice. What do you say we take a break on that?
Totally
note?
Get that checked out, for real.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the clitoral piercing, I mean, I worry about that, too. I mean, first of all, the only people I ever deal with that seem to get these, the sort of more aggressive piercings of the genitalia are people that have been sexually or physically abused. It just seems to be what the pattern is. And, you know, yes, I know body art has been around since the beginning of time, but in this culture, in this day, the people that choose to do that magically seem to have sexual abuse histories, number one. And number two, you can lose sensitivity over time. Eventually, things sort of don't feel so good. So while it might enhance sensitivity for a little while, sometimes it, long-term, it tends to decrease sensitivity rather severely. So I'd be careful. So Seth Green is in here tonight. The
thanks.
What is your official title at Robot Chicken, other than creator, director, executive producer?
Well, Matt and I are co-creators and co-executive producers. And then we both write and direct on the show.
And you do a lot of the voices, too. I didn't realize you did so much. But you do a lot of the voices,
yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, it's more of a budgetary issue. Like, we don't have a lot of money to spend on actors, so we can only afford 5 SAG actors, and by law, they can only do 3 voices, so that's 15 characters.
Oh,
you know,
my
by
God.
Reading the script, how many characters we have on the show, so I wanted to pick up a lot of it.
Oh, how interesting.
That's why I'm always tired, Drew.
And then, of course, Chris on The Family Guy, which is becoming iconic now. The Family Guy, give me a break.
Isn't that crazy?
Seth MacFarlane's unbelievable, and he does a lot of the voices. Or not?
Have you gone to their studio? You should go check out The Family Guy.
I have been over there. I've done a couple of. I played your dermatologist on that.
Oh,
Zit
that's
episode.
Right. That's right. I forgot about the pimple thing.
And then in an upcoming one, Stewie and I go broadcasting. I broadcast with Stewie one night.
You do
and,
that?
Yes, I do that. And I don't know if that made the air, but I actually recorded.
I never read the scripts, man. I just wait to see the show. I literally go in and just read my lines, and that way I can still be a fan.
And his operation is also something to behold. I mean, I went up there, I was like, oh my God, this is
amazing. Isn't that
amazing
what they built over there? Well, they do American Dad in the same studio.
And then Seth's involvement and supervision of every aspect of that is just, I mean, he sits there during the voiceovers too.
Yeah, well, he directs all the sessions.
It's amazing.
Nah, it's crazy. It's crazy, but, you know, people who like to work hard wind up working really hard.
That's the case. That is Seth Green. Phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Okay, there it is. Love Line, the amazing Seth Green in here
don't
with us
tonight.
Don't
you love that track, man? That's on the Strokes new record.
Oh, is that what that's from?
Yeah. It's a really good record.
Let's get... thank you, Anderson. You're right on the call. If you like it, Seth, we'll have none of it. Here's Jerry talking to Seth. Jerry, what's up?
Hey, Seth, how you doing?
I'm good, Jerry.
Good.
How are you doing?
Huge. Good. Huge Greg the Bunny fan.
Oh, thanks, man.
The last 20, 25 years. Hey, my buddies and I have had this discussion a few times. What was it that Montague was wearing on his head?
It's a helmet. It's like a football helmet of some kind.
It's supposed to be a football helmet?
Well, no, the actual real story behind it is when they did the show in New York for public access and they built that puppet, to make its mouth animatable, they like tore open a gorilla doll, and to make its mouth animatable, they had to remove like a section of his head, so they put like a football helmet from one of those bears, like a stuffed bear that's dressed up like a person. And put that helmet on to cover up the deficit in his head. So it just became his character thing.
Okay.
Yeah, not all that exciting, but true. Hey, they did a bunch of stuff on the Independent Film Channel. Like, we did a bunch of new shows.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
I think it's a Star Wars ripoff or Star Trek or something.
Oh, they did, like, a 2001 thing.
Yeah. That's
but we did some new shows. They actually produced, like, 5 or 8 new episodes, and the IFC ran them along with a bunch of older stuff. And I think they're going to put out a DVD. So if you like that show, man, this was the way it was supposed to be on Fox.
Oh, awesome. Great. Hey, and Dr. Drew.
Jerry.
Yeah, I got to tell you, from a viewer, or from a listener fan, sorry, Danny Bonaducci, you got to keep him off. All he does is talk about himself. It gets old.
All right, buddy.
Just a personal opinion.
All right, thanks for the input.
All right, thanks, Seth.
Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Man.
This is more Seth questions from Fletch.
Fletch?
Hey.
Fletch.
What's up, dude? I loved your first movie. Sequel not as crazy about.
For what? Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
How old are you?
From the olden 13. Times.
How old?
13.
13. Oh, yeah, that's way before you.
Yeah.
I'm elderly, man. I remember Fletch. You know, what's Fletch your, what's your story, man?
Yeah, at the end of Goldmember in Austin Powers. Are they ever going to make a remake?
I don't know. I Mike Myers is making the Keith Moon story right now, so I don't know if he's got any plans to do it. It's one of those things that I love, and I so can't even believe that I got to be a part of. And, you know, if another one comes about and it makes sense for everybody to do, I'm sure it would be a no-brainer to do, but no guarantees.
They left it wide open there at the end with the...
wide open. But, you know, you could do anything with it. They could do, like, a... They did that whole thing in the one movie where it was, like, flashbacks. You could do the whole thing as a flashback, play with kids.
Yeah, that's true. You know? All right, Fletch, thanks.
Yeah, and also, I love Robot Chicken, dude.
Thank you, sir.
He is not alone. This is now Patricia. Patricia.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? I'm with Seth Green.
Hey, Seth, what's up?
Hi Patricia. How's it going?
All right. I just had a quick question, actually.
All right, I've got one for you. What color is your hair, and how old are you? Sorry, that was two.
I'm 18, and I colored my hair a couple of times. It's like a dark brown, reddish color.
All right. Those were okay. My questions for you.
All right, thanks. Oh, and I just wanted to say you're really good at Without the Paddle.
Oh, thanks. So wait, you had a question?
Oh, yeah. My question was, does pre-cum have sperm, and if it does it have enough to get you pregnant?
It can commonly. I think that's the bottom line to that question. And it's not as though you're doing a sperm count on every guy you encounter, so you should consider it potential pregnancy material.
Okay, so there's potential to be pregnant off of pre-cum.
You should totally use condoms. That's
most.
Yeah, right. But I've looked it up, and there's been like mixed messages about it. So
there are mixed messages, but I will assure you that many times there's plenty of adequate sperm there. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Unless thank you.
Have a very tight gasket, Mario. What's up?
Hey. What's up, Seth?
How you doing, Mario?
Pretty
what's up,
good,
Mario.
Pretty good. Yeah, I know it's a gay name. I mean,
all right, Mario. Think of the big F bomb there. Let's try. So let's let Mario cool out a little bit. See if he can sort of develop an observing ego where he can learn not to use the F word and the S word when he's talking on national radio.
In the first 10 seconds of his call.
I mean, 9 words in. What's up, James?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
What's happening?
My girlfriend woke herself up last night having an orgasm in her sleep.
Good times.
You got a good one.
Yeah, well, I know I've got a good one, but I was wondering, you know, medically, is there anything to explain that? She doesn't recall having a sexual dream or anything of that nature, but
it's not
have any light on it.
Well, nocturnal orgasms, whether from men or women, don't necessarily have to be triggered by a dream. In fact,
right.
Often the dreams are sort of catching up with the arousal.
Mm-hmm.
That there's sort of natural arousals that occur during certain phases of sleep. And sometimes it can sort of fall into a seizure that comes off as an orgasm, sort of a spontaneous neurological event. And oftentimes it'll be associated with a dream, either triggering the event or being sort of associated with it. But, no, dreams don't have to be associated with nocturnal orgasms.
Right. So, I mean, it could be something like sort of like nocturnal myoclonus, but not really.
Nocturnal myoclonus is not, it's different in terms of its physiology, but as a concept, it's a reasonable way to think of it.
I see.
It's a spinal cord event, but again, with women, it's a little more complicated than that, but yes, there are stages of sleep that are associated with arousal. Sometimes those arousal under adequate levels of hormonal, you know, activity will result in orgasm.
So there's probably nothing wrong with her.
No, there's definitely nothing wrong with her. I mean, she's having multiple orgasms during the night. In fact, I was just hearing a study today where women that came off of serotonin reuptake inhibiting medication, antidepressant medicine, suddenly develop what's called persistent sexual arousal, where they're constantly having orgasms throughout the day and night, and it tends to be a problem. It sounds like fun, but it ends up screwing them up. Nice, huh?
I would have said it sounds like fun, yeah.
Okay. Brock, what's up there?
Hey, what's up? Hey, Seth Green, I'd just like to say I love you in all the Austin Powers movies. I think you're awesome in that, but I was just wondering
what
show going to be like.
What's that?
What show?
Seth Green show or something like that. I don't know.
What is this?
I appreciate your research.
I don't know, but I heard you were going to have a new show, and I was just wondering what it's going to be like.
New show?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I was doing a show for NBC for a minute, and that's like so 10 minutes ago. And the show I'm doing right now is called Robot Chicken. It's on the Cartoon Network's Adult Swim.
That's it. That's the one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you haven't seen Robot Chicken?
Brock. No,
Brock, you're a fool. You've been
missing
the boat.
Out of it. What time is it? 11:30?
It's on 11:30 on Sunday night, and I think they rerun it on Thursdays and some other time during the week. But we just put out the DVD of the first season, so if you want to see everything we did last year, you can buy it.
I suggest you go get that DVD. It is hysterical.
You're an excellent show, Drew. I appreciate it.
It's very, right. No, really.
Sounded like a plant.
No, but
like,
look.
It's like my publicist called Brock and said, you got to get him to mention the DVD and the street date and the new season.
She did bust my chop. She busted my chops a little bit about it. I'll be fair, but
man,
the fact
she takes
is,
care of me.
She really does.
Yeah,
you're lucky to be a part of two of the most popular animated programs of the last 10 years. Really, I mean, think
totally
about
crazy.
It. I mean, other than Simpsons,
well, you know what's great is like people liked Family Guy, so that actually by participation gave me an in to an audience. It gave me access to people that I might not necessarily have had.
You know what? I could see why you would think that, but I don't think that had anything to do with Robot Chicken's success. I really don't. Because you know, I'm watching my kids and their peers and things, and they just liked it. They just thought it was
good.
Great, and they didn't really were aware that it was you, I don't think. So there you go. What are you going to say? So more of my shilling. This is now, wait a minute. This is Dylan. What's up, Dylan?
Yeah, I just had a question for Seth Green.
Yes, Dylan?
I just want to say I love everything that you do.
Thanks, man.
And I was just wondering, like, how you became a comedian and just everything about that.
How I got started was when I was really young. I was, like, 7 years old. And my uncle had been doing casting in Philadelphia where I grew up. And he knew of an on-camera training school that I went to for a couple of weeks. And then they recommended me to a manager.
Slow down. Were you interested in it then? Or was your mom interested?
I was desperately interested in acting. Yeah, when I was really young, I was a staff brat at a summer camp. My parents worked there. And they had a drama program, and I begged them to, like, let me be a part of the plays. I was interested in it, and I liked, from when I was really young, I liked performing, and as far as how
was anybody in your family a performer, or how were you close to that?
No, I don't even know. I just watched a lot of TV, and I was lucky enough to have my calling, to feel like I had a calling, you know?
Wow.
Sometimes you feel like this is what I do.
At seven?
And, at younger, at like five, I loved performing and like dressing up in costumes and pretending to be other people and putting on shows for my family and stuff. It's just kind of, I was lucky enough to have that desire and wherewithal really early on. And you know, I slowly became like more professional about it as I got older and took it more seriously as a career. Started digging my heels in and trying to do, like in the last 5 years, I've gotten involved in producing and writing and directing stuff, which is very helpful if you want to stay relevant in the business.
Thanks, Dylan.
If you're looking to get started, you know, go meet it with agencies or try and get extra work and stuff just to be around it, see what it's like, see if you really
like
it.
Let me ask you this, though, Dylan. Seth, wouldn't your basic recommendation, now you tell me, this would be sort of mine, and you tell me if this is accurate, if you haven't already sort of established something and you're in school, isn't it best to sort of complete your education and study other things and then dig in a little
bit? I think education is definitely valuable because you can always learn something. But the truth is, and this is the absolute truth, Drew, if you want to be an actor, you have to literally want nothing else. And you have to be able to take it day in and day out, being rejected, not working, you know, lean times and fighting for it and struggling for it. And if you really want it, that's what it takes. That's what it takes. There's a great Barbra Streisand quote, and I'm not one to quote Barbra Streisand. But somebody asked her, how do I know if I should be an actor? And she said, if you have to ask, then you shouldn't. It's as simple as that. Because it's not an easy business. And I tell you, as the world changes and the focus becomes more and more on established celebrities, it's harder and harder for new people to break in. And you've got all these really established people fighting for the same, you know, small amount of parts available. So it's just a tough business, and you got to really want it and love it.
More and more people are creating their own jobs, too.
Yeah. Well, entrepreneurial way is the new way. You look at guys like Donald Trump or forgive the comparison, but 50 Cent, guys who literally built their brand name into an empire that spews off all sorts of merchandise.
Mm. Interesting.
It's just the new way.
Yeah, it just seems to be the way it's
If you don't have a restaurant and a clothing line to go along with your rap career and film career and sneakers, you just ain't keeping up with the Joneses.
Thanks, Dylan. Now, Anderson, if you could put up Justin in line one for me. Oh, no, I beg your pardon. Rose on line 4 is what I want to talk to. Rose. Hey, Rose, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's happening? You're almost Seth Green.
Hey, how's it going, Seth? Huge fan. Used to watch Seth on mute just to see you.
That's very sweet.
But I have a question, of course, or I wouldn't be calling. I recently met a guy who can get me off 10 times a night. And
wow.
I'm wondering if it's him or if I've just hit my stride.
Is he doing something different than other people were doing?
He's a little bigger, and he's got more muscle behind him, but not really.
What were you like before?
I don't know if he's doing anything different. He just doesn't stop. Most guys, you know, they bust it and quit.
So you're saying 10 times in one sitting?
In about...
For her.
A 5-hour go for me. It's about 10 times. I've blacked out twice.
How old are you?
23.
Blacking out. That is so rare.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. He can't wear any tank tops or wife beaters because people at work would ask questions about the marks, but he's not complaining.
Because you scratch him up is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Not that he's got some horrific deformity or tattoos.
No.
But you're not really multi-orgasmic. You're what we call sequentially orgasmic. You can have one and then another and then another. And that, you know, that probably is more about the two of you than about you hitting your stride, I suspect.
Really? So no cute guy at the bar is going to be able to pull it off for me.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you may actually find this gets kind of tiresome. I mean, how many people have 5 hours, 3 times a week to dedicate to this? You know what I mean? Eventually, you're going to end up with urinary tract. Seth, the good news is she's going to end up with urinary tract infections and vaginal irritation.
That's the good news?
Well, that's the good news. I think
a healthy sex life can't be too dangerous. I mean, if you're with somebody that you're totally into and you guys have great sex together, don't question it, you know?
Actually, we're not into each other other than that. That's why I'm wondering.
Oh.
Yeah, that is a common
thing,
too.
Well, that's going to run its course, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you guys are both looking to be single for several years and see other people in the midst of it.
Anything about you we need to know? Any trauma or physical abuse or anything?
No, nothing.
Nothing. So it's not as though only some certain kind of guy can get you off. So really, you got to find some combination. Now you know what this is. You have to find somebody also you can also...
But it also sounds like duration is an issue. Like,
yes.
It might just take you a while to warm up and get going. And if this guy has better control than the average guy you've been with, that's going to be really awful.
And you know what can be done. Maybe you can teach the next guy that you're actually in a relationship with to how to do that. So. Or find other ways, other techniques and things. What's that?
Is there any way to tell if a guy is going to be able to last? Because I don't really want to go bed hopping.
Experiment.
Hey,
Seth,
what are you doing while you're in town?
What's that?
Nothing, never mind.
You're not going to be able to tell, and most guys aren't going to go more than about 10 or 15 minutes, but there may be other things you can do, other toys and things you can kind of work with, things that can be done, and you just need to have a partner that's willing to sort of listen to you and work with you is the important thing. But again,
you gotta have somebody
5 hours,
you're up for.
5 hours, there are not many people that can...
But is that also the requirement? Is that what you need is 5 hours, or is it just that's the way it's been going?
That's just the way it's been going.
What would your ideal time frame be?
Probably about 2.
You guys don't date, you're just having sex?
Yeah.
I got you.
Seth, how dare you, Seth? Of course, that's all I do.
No. Okay. I mean, that happens plenty. It's just a matter of, like, I'm trying to establish that's why. It's like, if you have a purely sexual relationship with somebody, that's what it is. Everything centers around that. So the sex itself is incomparable to anything that you have in other situations. It just is, because it's a separate, standalone thing. And everything is focused on it, so it's usually more impressive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that usually, as you pointed out earlier, doesn't sort of sustain.
It'll just run its course. It'll just run its course.
Exactly.
It goes as long as it does.
That is the incomparable, as you said, Seth Green. standalone Seth Green. The phone number here is
1-800. I got plenty of opinions, Drew.
1-800-LOVE-191. We're going to take a little break. Be right back. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191. Seth Green in here with us.
Yes, sir.
And I'm just, we're having a big brown-nosing session, basically. Me and the college.
It's such a love fest.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And I've, I think your publicist will be happy. I think I hit all the marks that she was asking
me
to hit.
Oh, I got one more for you.
Oh. Okay, let's go.
Well, my buddy Hugh and I put out a comic called Freshman last year, and the trade paperback is coming out on April 12th. And the reason I mention this is because a lot of people complained to me that they couldn't find the comic or that they didn't have a comic book store near them. And this is a collected works that you can buy in a bookstore or on, like, an internet thing. And it's awesome, and I'm so proud of it and so proud of my friend Hugh.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Freshman. Trade paperback in stores April 12th.
So is that something they get on Amazon, too?
Yeah, you can totally. Literally any bookstore.
All right, fair enough.
Hey, Seth, is your agent listening?
What's that?
Is your agent?
No, the publicist.
Is my agent listening? No, my publicist is in the other room making sure I don't
file. If your agent's listening, I mean, with all the ass-kissing going on, you should start demanding like $20 million a pick, I would think. It's not just Drew. It's all the callers, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Next time I do one of these free appearances on radio, I'm going to demand some perks and benefits.
That's it. That's the ticket. Yeah.
I need a cup of water and some Cheetos. Oh, wait. Here they are.
The thing I loved about Seth, he used to show up to the studio driving an old black beat-up Civic. I loved that.
Yeah, I did. I had a Civic from 97 until last year.
Now it's only limos, right?
I don't even have a license anymore. I threw it out the window.
Nice.
I'm like, drive me, bitch.
And you're tell me your story and your parents again. Your folks still around?
No, yeah, my folks are still around, but they've been split up since I was 15. But the best thing about getting older, Drew, is getting to know my parents as people.
Nice.
It's an interesting experience. Like, the older I get, the more I get to know my parents just as, like, friends. And you still rely on them for the maternal and paternal
things.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But I've gotten to, like, accept them as people as opposed to kind of revering them as super people that could disappoint me.
Right.
It's a really great experience.
Cool. Christina, what's up? Christina. Caller who goes by Christina from Corona. Anderson, can you help me with that one?
She's up.
Christina? She's not.
She's gone.
We got a crazy three-way call going there.
Let's get up April on line 5. April? April? No, she's off too. No,
I put her up and then you put her off.
No, don't April. Hang up on me.
No, right,
we got you. What's happening?
Who is this, April?
This is April.
Hey, what's up, April?
I wanted to call and say that you are both awesome, and I love Seth Green in Party Monster. And
every time
I hear Two of Hearts, it makes me so happy.
Oh, jeez. Thanks.
It's the best part of the movie. The whole movie is awesome.
And the saddest thing is we had to shoot that scene twice.
Ooh.
Oh. Yeah.
It's this long, like, 7-minute intercut, jump cut dance sequence, and me and Mac had to do it. And it's a lock-off shot so they can jump cut in between and not have the frame change but have us move all around the room. And it took, like, 15 minutes to shoot. It's literally us bouncing around, dancing our asses off.
Crazy. It's awesome. It makes me so happy.
Thank you. We had to do it twice.
Did you get to meet James St. James?
I did. I've been fortunate enough to spend a bunch of time with James, actually, and he just doesn't disappoint.
He sounds really awesome.
Yeah, he's an amazing, amazing guy and a super talented writer, and it was really a pleasure and an honor to get to play him.
That's so awesome.
Thanks.
That's it, April?
I have another question, maybe.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I have a vertical hood piercing.
Vertical what?
I have a vertical hood piercing.
Okay. Hood. I thought you said head. And I'll bet Drew did, too. And we were like, how does that even work?
All right, listen, people are putting spears through everything now. Seth, what are you going to do?
Okay, so you have a vertical hood piercing.
Right. And I was hoping that, you know, it would bring instantaneous, like, multiplier.
No.
No, not so much.
No.
I'm calling for hints.
Are you able to have orgasms with intercourse?
No.
That's not going really. To be you. That's a genetic thing. That's not something you can stick some hardware through your clitoris and suddenly change.
But can
for
you
the
have
most
orgasms?
Part.
Yeah.
With oral sex,
usually the
though.
Cause.
The cause.
You know, by myself and maybe with a little help.
How about oral sex? You tried that?
I don't really care for it. I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable.
Well, that's where the solution's going to be. Because most women, or either that or some sort of maybe device.
I wonder, is it a comfort thing, though? Because she said she can by herself. So does that mean it's just a lack of comfort with somebody else?
A lot of women will feel like, oh, that's gross, or the guy's not comfortable down there, or what must he be thinking, or I can't feel comfortable in my own skin when he's down there. The fact is, the guy's fine, April. He's there because he wants to be there. And what he wants to do is please you. So you just need to relax and let that happen. And, in fact, help him. Instruct him a little bit what you need.
But I have known girls who could not have, like, orgasms from intercourse. There's nothing to be, like, embarrassed about. It's just that, the way it goes.
Seth, that's 60% of women in most studies.
I said
50%.
I knew some, Drew.
All right.
I haven't taken a poll.
Okay. Well, it's 100% in your study. Anyway, it's Seth Green. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE. How dare you? 191. Robot Chicken. Chris on the Family Guy. Recently, Four Kings. They going to air that for a while more, Four Kings?
I don't think so. I'm actually trying to get a DVD of the remaining shows.
And speaking of DVDs, first season of Robot Chicken is out and available. We'll be back with more Seth Green, more you, after this. Everybody, the phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. This is Loveline. And Seth, we can't get on with Loveline because we're being inundated with calls for you. So what are we going to do? It's Seth Green in here tonight. And just to reset, Seth was good enough to let me be a voice on Robot Chicken. And then he gave my kids a tour of the amazing facility they've got. And it really is truly something to behold.
It's crazy. It's so much bigger than you
think. It's crazy. It's crazy.
How complicated that operation is. Yeah.
I mean, just dozens of people just building cars and scenes. Dozens of people just building dolls. Dozens of people just doing animated scenes, 10 seconds.
The most fun about it is that there's not a lot of stop motion operations going on in town. Plus our show is fun to work on, so we get our pick of the top talent in the business.
People.
We have some of the greatest people working on our show.
Well, that's what I was asking your guys. Like, how did you get started with this? How did you find these people? Who did you know to talk to about these amazing talents? And then it's funny also. You walk
a lot of research and interviews, and our animation directors pointed us in the right direction. Because there's, it's a small community of people that do this stuff, that do the animation, that do the set construction, that do the lighting, that do all the technical aspects.
Right. That makes sense.
Editing, it's the same as, aside from the technical side of it, the editing of it, it's the same as cinema. The lighting of it, is the same as cinema, except for the size. Same with the sets and puppets. It's like, aside from the scale, these people are all motion picture quality.
And what's interesting? And you go from little set to set. There's about 12 sets there. And each one, you pull the curtain back and you start cracking up. you pick up one curtain, and here's Pegasus with a little girl with a big pair of scissors running behind, just frozen there. Like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then the next one, you got the Wizard of Oz.
You neglect to mention that the Pegasus' foot is in a bear trap.
Right. There, we can see the bear trap coming, right. And then the next one is a bunch of pumpkins sitting there making fun of each other. It's like, what the hell's going on here? It's very, very funny.
When Matt and I are editing the show, I will look at him as we watch a sketch, and I'll go, what the hell are we making?
What happened to our lives?
What is this?
Is that when you had your one of your writers functioning as a joystick in a...
Zach.
Oh, God. So, James, what's up? You're on Seth Green. James?
Oh, I'm on?
Hey, what's up, dude?
Oh, man. Dude, you rock.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, man. Oh, man, I'm nervous.
No, don't even be nervous, because you'll totally regret it.
Oh, actually, I have two questions. My first question is for you, Seth.
Yes, sir.
On the beginning of the first episode of the second season.
Uh-huh.
How did you come up with the opening sequence?
This was a long. You're talking about the Superman thing?
Yeah.
With the rings and the council?
Yeah.
It was a long discussion, actually, because we wanted to do something exciting for the premiere of our second season. We wanted to tie
very
into.
Funny.
Oh,
at
the end of the first season, we had a cliffhanger that the show had been canceled. That Keith Crawford came in and canceled the show.
Yeah, I've seen every episode.
Oh, thanks, man. So that was it. We sat around for a while and talked about what we wanted to do and the different ways to bring us back. And I can't even remember who came up with the idea of doing the Superman parody, but we all wrote it in the room. And then the other idea was to tie it into the opening sequence with the chicken and the scientist, because we wanted to have all of us on trial, essentially, and have all the legends of Adult Swim act as like the Kryptonian council. And,
of course,
you got
Peter.
and Space Ghost and Master Shake, yeah.
Right.
And then it's actually Mike Lazo, who's the head of the Cartoon Network, or the head of the Adult Swim, acting as the judge and jury.
That's so
And then
funny.
It was a long process. The bunch of us all wrote it together.
That was just genius, man. I was laughing throughout the whole time.
Thank you, man. We did it for you.
All right. And my second question was for Drew.
Yeah.
I was on MySpace, and you remember how you said that you guys had there was a love line thing?
We had one under in the group area, I believe it's called, and we were sort of monitoring it for a while, and then our producer said, why don't you cut that out for a while?
There's two.
There's two now?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm on both of them.
Yeah.
And also, when I was going through it, I found somebody that said he was you.
Nope, wasn't me.
Yeah, he's one of my friends. I added him just for novelty.
Here's the problem. When somebody says they're me, they're impersonating a physician, and that's a felony.
I know.
So it's not something that they should be doing casually.
I know. I haven't asked him any questions, but I just added him just so he could be there.
There's a lot of that, Drew. There's a lot of people on MySpace acting as celebrities
and
literally like writing blogs and showing photos. Yeah. And
I know.
It's a dangerous thing just because it's such a personal environment for people to meet each other on. And
yes,
it's just an awful place for predators.
Oh, my God, yes. And my wife and I kind of like it because we can keep track of my kids' friends and things. You know what I mean? They're meeting a new kid. We're like, who is this kid? We'll go look on his MySpace and see what's on it. And if we see things we don't like, we're going to know what you read is something that...
I don't know that there's any actual celebrities writing under their own name on MySpace.
Right, and so just learn to be sort of literate with media. Just don't believe everything you read. Jim, what's up?
Hello?
What's happening, Jim? Hello. Yep.
I'm attracted to bestiality porn, and I'm wondering what could have caused this.
What do you mean?
I guess I like it because it seems like degrading to...
When you talk about bestiality porn, like, what are you talking about?
Girls with horses or dogs, you know.
You just like that it's degrading to women?
Yeah.
Well?
Well, to me it seems like it is, and I guess that's kind of why. I'm just wondering what could have caused me to think like this.
Are you into like S&M stuff? Do you find yourself only getting turned on when you're demeaned, or do you like being like a dominator in those situations? Is that part of it, or is it specifically the bestiality?
I just like to watch it, I guess, and it seems like it's degrading to them, and I guess that's why I like it.
Are you dating at all? Do you see women at all?
No.
Are you attracted to women?
Yeah.
You know, I think, Jim, when you start actually having a social life, some of this will settle down. What you're sort of aroused by in a fantasy life doesn't necessarily mean it's going to reflect what you do in your relationships. And, you know, there's some research that just came out this week that shows that by looking at sexual material, it can really change young people and their ideas about sexuality and their likelihood of getting involved in sexual things. And why should that really surprise us? You know, think about any other primate pod. We had a bunch of chimpanzees, and you showed them a bunch of very evocative, violent images or sexual images. Would we be surprised that these chimpanzees would start getting, you know, extra excited and doing crazy things? Humans are the same way. And you need to kind of restrict your access to that kind of stuff, to kind of take it easy, start to focus on having real relationships and get out in the world there. And this, I think, will settle down on its own.
And just explore other areas.
So what's your name?
Oh, boy, Tara. Whew. Go ahead, finish up.
What was that?
Oh, I'm just saying, it was the next caller.
Oh, okay, because if anybody... It's just like if you find yourself fascinated by stuff, you might not have enough influences, you know? Like, take a look around at some other things and see if some other things turn you on.
There you go. Tara.
Yeah.
What's up?
Hey, what's up? Hey, Seth Green, I'm a big-time fan. Me and my best friend love you to death. Love. Loved you in Party Monster. Can't hardly wait. Everything.
Oh, thanks, guys.
I have a question for you. It's actually a two-part question. First question. Vern Troyer.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure you've had a lot of time with him.
Huh?
I'm sure you spent a lot of time with him.
I've spent a bit of time with him.
Yeah. On The Surreal Life, they portrayed him as like a real jerky kind of guy. Like, he was real jerk and real arrogant and very...
I think I know where you're going with this. There's a two-part answer to this. No, there's a two-part answer to this. First thing is, whenever you're dealing with any kind of reality TV, you are at the whim, you know, at the mercy of the whim of the producers and how they want to portray you and cut you. Because anybody, under any circumstances, if you edit the right things out and you put the right things in, you can really create an image and a storyline that doesn't necessarily exist.
Right.
That said, Vern has it really rough. He is about 30 inches tall, and you got to put that into perspective. It's very small, and he needs assistance in almost every aspect of his life.
Right.
Wow.
And he was somebody that gets stared at way before he was famous just because of his unique size. And it's such an oddity to see somebody of that size. And the first time that I met him, I just had to like chill out and talk rock music with him, so there was no issue. And then we just slowly got comfortable with each other, and it was cool.
Right.
But as a result, you know, since he's become famous, oh my gosh, I was at a concert and he was there, and just the way that people came at him was so intense and so overwhelming and so familiar and aggressive, and I just immediately felt protective over him. And you can see the way that affects a person. So I think in a lot
like
of those situations,
like
yeah, well, and also I saw
on you would protect them,
right? But he also, you just feel emotionally protective for him by the way that people inappropriately behave around him. So I watched a little bit of The Surreal Life, and I saw him seem kind of standoffish or not wanting to participate in a lot of the things, and it really looked to me like just so many of the things he couldn't do. They were all going horseback riding, and he has trouble. He has trouble just walking place to place. So you know, he had his much less flattering moments on that show. He had a really bad night where he got super drunk and kind of embarrassed himself. And I asked him. I asked him about it. You know, I said, man, that's got to be intense. You had a really rough night, and what's been the fallout? And he said, the hardest thing about it is I had a rough night. I went on a bender, and it was on TV. And people saw it. He said, people have done far worse and more embarrassing things, and I was stupid enough to let myself do it on TV.
Right.
Yeah, but so I like Vern. He's a good guy.
Yeah. And my second question is, was it really hard for you to play such an eccentric, extravagant character in Party Monster?
Yes and no. Yes, because it was a lot of work, and it was really intense, and it was so different from me and anything that I knew and anything that I was comfortable with and familiar with. But I had an audition a really long time ago for a character in drag, and I just wasn't ready, and I was scared and hesitant and didn't give a good audition and was uncomfortable in the clothes, which is the antithesis of somebody who dresses in drag. And I didn't get that part, and I kind of made a pact with myself that if I ever got the opportunity to do it again, that I was going to kill it.
Well, both of us, me and my best friend, have a lot of gay friends, and you don't know how much that movie has meant to them.
Good.
A straight actor like you, who has been in a lot of funny movies and that they respect for being a straight actor, would go and do such a great job at that movie.
Thank you. I love that movie, and it was really important to me. And Mac and I actually spent 2 years with it before we got the financing to do it, both like dedicated to getting it made. Just because I think it's such an important... It's an important documentation of a very relevant time in our culture and this faction of society, these completely... you know, separated, disaffected misfits that kind of congregated together in the intent of creating a utopia, and you see how any situation, even the most perfect of situations, under lawlessness and excess are going to implode. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, it led to murder, but it's still, the point behind the movement was so valuable. And these kids were really ahead of their time with the way that they picked up with Warhol's analogies of pop culture and success and celebrity and kind of twisted it on its ear and just created their own sensation around themselves. They were brilliant business people as much as they were completely out of their mind at the time. I love that movie so much, and I love when people connect to it. So thank you.
Thanks, Tara. This is Don now. Don?
Hi.
Hey, what's happening?
Hi, Don.
Hi. First of all, I love all your movies.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. And I have a question. Is it, like, right for a girl to, like, get an erection over another girl even though you're straight?
When you say get an erection, that kind of implies that you have a penis, which if you're a girl, you should probably get checked out.
Yeah.
But if you just mean like get turned on, I know plenty of girls that get turned on by other girls, and it's kind of that same thing that you were talking about, Drew, where if you have something romantic or sexual, that some kind of imagery or influence, there's nothing, you'll just as a mammal
Yes.
kind of arousal that has nothing to do with your sexual orientation.
And the reality is that women are so much more sexually appealing. They just, men are sort of gross, and women are something beautiful, and they've certainly become associated with sexuality in our culture. And
also, have you noticed, man, how much more socially accepted strippers and exotic dancing and like bisexuality has become?
It's weird. I did a thing at a club today, sort of a thing for some journalists, and across the street from this big club in New York called Bed. Across the street. Yeah, across the street. Oh, that's the strip club. This is the club, and that's the strip club right next door. So, what? That's weird. But whatever. It's a sort of part of what people do at night now.
It's just the way it is. Yes! I'm surprised they don't have a Stripping with Celebrities, a reality show yet.
Uh-oh. Seth's new project.
No, dude. I've got far more ambitious goals.
Okay, then.
All right, Don. Don't worry.
How old are you?
Whoops, I just put on hold.
You guys gotta talk to her about the whole erection thing, please.
Yeah, what did that mean when she said, do you get an erection? Does that...
No. You mean aroused, right, Don?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How old are you?
16.
Yeah, women get engorgement and lubricated, they don't get erections.
I always was envious of a woman's ability to hide her arousal.
Jenna, what's up?
Hi.
Hi, Jenna.
Hello?
Yeah, what's going on? You're on with Seth Green.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, Jenna. It's good. Hi. How you doing?
I love your movie.
Oh, thanks.
I loved you in Italian Job.
Oh, thanks. That was fun.
And that was filmed in my neighborhood. You know that crazy big house you guys were in? Did you go
we always talk about this, and I never got to actually go in, and I'm jealous because those houses were crazy, Drew.
Amazing.
Hey, Drew. One day I'm coming over. We're having dinner.
Let's do it.
Drew, what's up? this ass-kissing fest that's going on, you know, it would be killing me with anybody else, but I can't get upset because it's Seth.
Oh,
right.
I mean,
I know.
He's just such a down-to-earth guy.
You nerd. But now you're totally in on it. Let's all make out.
Most other guests we've had on here, I would be freaking out.
I know, you'd be pissed. Yeah, I know. You'd be angry. So thanks for bringing that up. So Jenna, what's going on?
Well, I know, I think it's kind of sensitive for my boyfriend, but he's really embarrassed about the subject of porn.
In what sense?
And... I'm totally okay with that, and I would watch porn with him. I just want to try new things, but he's really embarrassed about watching it with me. I just want to.
Sounds like a lot of different issues getting shortcut into one question.
Right.
Like there's a lot of backstory there. How long have you guys been together?
A year.
A year, and you're trying to introduce new things in the relationship to keep it exciting and spontaneous. Do you guys have like an active sex life, or are you trying to affect that?
Yeah. I just want to spice things up and try new things.
Do you watch porn by yourself?
No.
So it's just something you want to try to bring in for him?
Well, actually, I just want to know, isn't it like every guy's dream to have...
No, absolutely not necessarily. No, because plenty of guys can be into porn and plenty of guys can be totally turned off by it. It just depends on how you create your own intimacy and what is arousing to you. It doesn't mean anything's wrong with him at all.
And it's something he would want to... I mean, I think a lot of guys want to know that you're aroused by it. That if it's not something you're aroused by, why he's sort of, not being necessarily interested in it.
But there are guys who are just totally not into porn because their sexual relationships are far less showy than that.
Yes,
it's like a super intimacy. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yes, I get you. So, Jenna, if he's not into it, that's fine. Just focus on the relationship, all right?
Okay.
All righty. My goodness. I think there is more information there, but we're not going to dig, okay? Let's talk to somebody that went to camp with you back when God knows when. Lisa.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Hey.
Oh, this is awesome.
Kobe.
It's what?
Lisa Kobe. It's a blast from the past. Camp Harlem.
What's going on?
How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, now, Lisa.
Yes.
It says here you have a love letter that Seth wrote to you 20 years ago.
Not 20 years ago. We're not.
Oh, how long ago? how long ago?
16.
16 years ago.
Maybe 17 years ago.
I beg your pardon. I was way off with the 20.
Don't add any more years, please.
What I'd love to know
is,
can you read us a couple of sentences from that letter?
This is true. How dare you?
This is true. And luckily, my parents just sold their house in Philly, so I found my old Camp Harlem goodbye letter book. And
this is
very
awesome.
Special letter. From Mr. Seth Green.
Get that music, Anderson. Come on.
Years old.
Waiting for it to start.
How old was I?
I really want to send it to you because you're going to die because you drew a picture of yourself on it.
That's what I do.
So good. Okay.
I'm all about impressing the ladies with my skills.
Yeah. Oh, obviously. This is like one of the only pages I saved out of that book after I was cleaning out the house. So I was like,
But Lisa, if you had gone for this guy then, just think where you'd be.
No kidding.
Is he hot?
I don't think it was meant to be. Do you want to hear the good parts?
Oh, gosh.
Is it okay, right. Seth?
Actually pretty short. I can read it to you.
Read it.
It says, Lisa, okay, so you're with Odie. So what? No, I'm not jealous. By the way, I wrote this letter in the dark. I hope you enjoy the sunrise. I'm glad you agreed to come with me. I did and do like you, and well, maybe something will happen. If not, you're my friend, right? If you go, enjoy Israel. Love you, Seth. And then at the bottom, it says, by the way, nice cheek. I don't know your lips very well. By the other way, I'm not constantly horny.
Oh, check me out. 14 years old. Sweet talking the ladies in the literary way.
Already on it. You were on it at 14, Seth.
Here's
here's
the crazy thing.
He was, like, really on it. More than most of the other boys, I will say.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
A little pursuer. I just recall calling you perverted.
Writing it in the dark and talking about
that's comedy. What everybody called before they knew me.
I know. Yeah. I know. So
that's hilarious.
And then once they knew you, they called you that again. But anyway.
Yeah.
So
well, once they get to
saying?
Know me.
Yeah, the one thing.
What was I saying? Odie was actually the son of the athletics director at the summer camp. My mom worked at this camp, and that's how I became a camper there.
Yeah,
and he was a friend of mine from where we were
really. The oldest bunk you could be in.
Still what's that?
Be a camper.
Who, me?
Yeah, both of us.
Yeah, no, I stayed there.
You did? You just never left Camp Harlem?
I never left, no.
Where was Camp Harlem?
It was in the Poconos of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Wow. It was awesome. I'm sure all the rules have changed, but when I was there, it was really, really great. And for me, it was a perfect oasis because, you know, I was unpopular and kind of picked on in school. And when I went to summer camp, I could just be myself. You know?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's weird.
And it was somehow more impressive in that environment.
Well, people see you were still involved in acting since you've been really young. People knew that you were in movies and stuff. That was Can't Buy Me Love Dave.
Oh, that's right. Oh, gosh.
You had like a little notoriety, but it was more of like a reputation. You were trying to be a ladies' man.
I wasn't trying.
Back in the day, you weren't trying.
I was making moves. Thanks for reading that, Lisa. That is hilarious.
No, I thought it was too much. And if you want, get in touch with me. I'll send you a copy. And I have pictures, too, from
camp.
Oh,
cool.
I moved out here. I'm in Santa Monica now.
Hey, wait. Hey, wait. Give your info to the engineer or something off air.
Yeah, give your information to the screeners.
I don't want
to send it. Oh, what?
I don't want Lisa's info. Come on.
Well, but Seth does.
I know.
Relax.
We'll get it. Mom.
All right. Thank you. Let's talk to Jamie. Jamie, what's up there?
Hello.
Hi, Jamie. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Jamie? You coming out from under the covers or something? What was that?
Yeah, well, something like that.
From the bong, really. So go ahead.
Hey, Seth, man. I love you. You're a great actor.
Thanks, dude.
You're welcome. My question is that I'm having, I've had this trouble for, like, a long time, like, I can have casual sex and no problem, but like once I like start to develop a relationship with a guy, and for some reason after that intimacy is just like impossible, and like it's been a real problem for me. Like my last boyfriend left me because he thought that I was cheating on him. And
you're gay.
Yeah.
Well, whenever that kind of thing happens, it's usually that intimacy, true intimacy, not just physical intimacy, but true emotional intimacy, is scary, vulnerable, and overwhelming, and so you avoid it. And it's hard to function sexually, particularly when you feel like that part of you is sort of bad or dirty. And when somebody has that sort of internal split where they feel like their sexual self is somehow bad and can't be exposed to somebody they really feel genuinely intimate with, that's usually a sign of sexual abuse. So did that happen to you?
I have scars from it, but I don't remember it happening.
All right, that's fine, but that's where that kind of comes from, where sexuality gets sort of procedurally marked as a part of myself I have to hide from somebody that I have good feelings for. And that's something that really requires therapy, Jamie. I mean, I would talk to somebody about it. There are people in Los Angeles that specialize in this kind of thing. You might want to talk to the Del Amo Treatment Center over in Torrance. There's a guy named John Seeley over there. I know you're in Los Angeles, and he's somebody that can help out with this sort of thing. Phone number is 1-8.
Therapy, honestly, is like one of the hardest things to actually do honestly. But if you do it and, like, scratch to the core of all that stuff that's troubling you and get past it, it is life-changing.
And in his case, in Jamie's case, it's really a procedural memory and memory's not even an accurate word, sort of procedural effect on his brain development that leaves him in this sort of splintered state. And that's something that can be worked out in a relationship called therapy. That's all. So phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. That is Seth Green over there advocating therapy and writing all the cool love letters for the ladies when he's 14. The show is Robot Chicken. The DVD for season one is in stores now. Can you, where else can you get it online? Can you just like log
on to... Yeah, you can totally get it online.
Anyway. Yeah, and the new season started last week.
It just started on Sunday.
It's on Sunday, and you could have, I guess on Thursday you'll be able to get to see the re-air.
I think they rerun it on Thursdays, but Sunday, 11:30 is our regular night.
Of Seth standing before the council. What's it called? What kind of council is it called?
We ape the Kryptonian Council from Superman.
Kryptonian Council.
Yeah.
It's very funny. He gets
locked into... You know what I'm talking about? Terrence Stamp as General Zod?
And then you get locked into a window pane like they do, and or a piece of glass. Or
exactly.
And the comedy is, in this case, it gets run into by some aliens. And
well, it's all right. Yeah, we have these sparkle suit aliens that show up all the time.
And they run into these guys when they're in the glen. They're, damn, what was that? So, anyway, it's something worth saying. And also, of course, Family Guy plays Chris. Everyone knows that. And Four Kings, until very recently, is something we're going to miss. And it's something they should be looking for in the future, Seth?
Freshman usual? Trade paperback April 12th in your local bookstore.
Right. Excellent. Any movies coming up?
I'm reading a bunch of stuff, man. Like I said, I've been working straight for the last 2.5 years doing this show, and I did Four Kings, and it is just...
So he's going to get a break this summer and do a film.
That's
probably,
my plan,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for something good to do.
Again, that phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll be right back. With more Loveline and Seth Green, phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. And this,
hey, Drew
is...
Gill just told me that according to the Adult Swim website, the Robot Chicken's on tonight.
Oh, really?
All right, so it may already be over by now, but that's what they're saying.
It's well worth seeing that episode. It's very, very funny. Let's see, I can't seem to get... Is Jamie on line 5? Can somebody pull that one up for me? Can't seem to get her to come up. There she is. Jamie?
Hello?
Hi, Jamie. What's happening? You're almost
Seth
Green.
Jamie.
Hi, I'm not a gusher, but yeah, I like your movie, Seth.
Oh, thanks. I thought you were talking about something completely different.
That'd be a gusher.
Everybody calls and says, oh, how great you are and how much, you know, they like your movies, and I do, but I don't like doing that.
Oh, okay. Well, no worries. I appreciate it in the spirit with which it's meant.
But I kind of have a problem, like, since it's most been really bad the last 6 months, but since like last May when I broke up from my long-term relationship, I've had a real problem when I've been drinking and I'm pressured. I kind of just give in to sex.
So
and
she'll sleep with
like,
you. She just won't kiss your ass, I guess.
I'm
that's
sorry?
What you're saying.
Is that what you're saying, that you're finding yourself drinking a lot and under that influence you're having a lot of sex?
What just happened there, Drew? I have no idea. That
all
wasn't
calls
on my end.
Just went away.
That's weird. That wasn't mine. Okay, thanks.
Hello?
Yeah, we're back.
Sorry about that.
We're having weird technical things. First of all, after women have a traumatic breakup, they will sometimes go through a period of increased sexual activity. And I think it's motivated by various psychological things, one of which is to try to feel better about themselves and to try to put that out of their head, and also to try to get control over the feelings of being traumatized and neglected or abandoned. And it's interesting, Seth. A comment I seem to make almost every night on the show is that when things happen that are of a traumatic nature, humans have an extraordinary way of sort of going out and reenacting the traumas all over again. I was even remarking one night I was watching Family Guy, and Brian even did that. He had a near-death experience, so he goes out in the name of living his life up and ends up nearly killing himself again.
And that's
basically what people do. They will have something bad will happen to them, and they magically end up reenacting the same thing over and over again, which is kind of what happens after somebody's been left in a bad relationship. They go through a whole string of bad relationships right afterwards. But
is that what you're saying, or are you saying that you're fine? Because it sounded like you said she was drinking a lot and having sex.
Not exactly. I'm drinking a lot. I mean, okay, up until I broke up with my ex when I was in high school, I was...
And you broke up with him, is what you're saying?
He had been cheating on me probably 2 years, and I finally just came to my senses. Really.
How long were you guys together?
3.5 years, almost.
And you said for 2 years he was cheating on you.
I'm 22, and this was my first real relationship. Before that, I was in high school. I was all about high school. I, like, kept a 4.0. I did
hundreds of activities and stuff. And then after high school, he was my life. And then after that, it was just kind of like, I'm always on my own. And then I started going out with, like, different friends and stuff. And then, I mean, it wasn't so bad at first, but, like,
but listen, hang on a second. Okay. The other question Seth is asking, which is appropriate, is this part of a problem with alcohol that this is happening?
I don't drink that much. I mean, I almost wish it were that simple, because then it's like I could identify the problem and I could deal with it. But it's, I mean, I
and
drink.
And hang on now, are you a trauma survivor otherwise? Because there's a sort of another version of this, which is that if you had some trauma in childhood, somebody died, somebody abandoned, and then this happens again in your young adult life, you can get sort of a post-traumatic stress reaction.
Yeah, well, and I was in foster care. I never knew my dad. My mom's boyfriend was
So there we go. So this is a bigger issue. This is a much bigger issue.
I was counseling from the time I was 7 to, like, the time I was 16, but my problem... See, the problem, I know I need help to talk to somebody, but my problem is I overthink everything, and I know all the right answers to where they'll tell me, okay, she's fine. And then I left on myself and thinking, why did I do that? But it's don't want help.
Thinking, unfortunately, is not the most important process in getting over what you've been through. It's being able to establish and sustain a stable relationship. That is not a thinking process. And so in therapy, what you need to do is explore a relationship with a professional.
But one of the things that she said, Drew, is that she's having trouble because she's outsmarting the doctors in her therapy, where she'll
literally just... But she's overthinking, but she knows the right answers. And the fact is, if she's in a therapeutic situation where they're wanting her to tell them her thinking on things, that's probably not a good therapeutic situation. What she needs is just to be present with another person and learn to be there emotionally and experience an increasingly broad range of emotions in the context of a relationship with a therapist.
Which is a scary thing to do, but totally
absolutely.
Valuable.
Therapy's for losers. It's what she needs to do. Edwin, what's up?
Yes, I was calling because I have a problem with my penis, and I was going to ask a doctor to see this kind of surgery they can do for decrease the size of my penis.
Seth?
that sounds like a fool's task. And
yeah, what are we talking here? What's the problem?
I've been married 3 times, and three of my wives say that they don't get satisfied because it hurts them. You know what I'm saying?
What are we talking here?
About my penis, you know.
No, no, no. I get that. I'm saying how big is it that it hurts them?
It's about, I say, about 11 inches.
Oof. That's
and
bad times.
You know, I'm being divorced three times.
Why have these women been divorced 3 times because of the huge honker?
How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 28.
Where are you from?
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Chicago. I was born in Mexico though, but I'm from Chicago.
You know, it's tough, man. I mean, I've actually heard people complain about that. I seem to be a perfect size, but I've heard people complain about being too big because, you know, a girl's only so deep, and you get to a point where it's not fun.
Well, it's not the depth so much as the fact that the girth really can tear and irritate and cause a problem. While it might be novelty and fun at first, for most women, there are many more complaints about too big than too small. And too big, when it really is a problem, is a deal breaker.
Is that even a possibility, Drew, like a reduction?
I don't know. There's a surgeon in town in Los Angeles named Dr. Alter that does this kind of, all the sorts of genital surgeries. I don't know if there's a reduction. I doubt it. I doubt that there is. Because the sort of the cavernous bodies are pretty much fixed. What's that?
You've got to find the right girl. Somewhere there is a girl that is the perfect fit.
I mean, I've been married 3 times, and they say that they can, you know, come because he hurts and these and that. So,
this
you
is
know.
What I'm. I've got one question though. It's like, how do you get to the point where you're getting married?
Right.
If the relationship's not workable.
Right. How come they don't know going in that there's a problem, an anatomical problem?
I mean, you know, at first that they're good and everything, but they come to the point that they can take it and this and that or whatever. You know, so
you're saying they like it at first? Yeah. They initially like
first,
it.
First, there's no complaint at first. You know what I'm saying? But then when the relationship start going, they start complaining and this and that. So,
what, do you, like, marry them on the third date? but, you know, that was, he's kind of sad for me. I mean,
yeah, it is sad, but I think Anderson brings up an important point, which is that maybe you ought to be in a longer-term relationship with these women to see if a marriage is going to work out before you get married, to make sure this sort of a complaint isn't going to emerge. And as Seth said, there's got to be somebody out there that sort of fits, and you got to go find that person. Josh.
He needs to cash in and go into the porn world, and he'll meet plenty of ladies.
I knew somebody was going to say that. Josh, what's happening?
Hello?
Hi, Josh.
Yeah, hi. I have this situation with my girlfriend. Like, I wanted to spice up like our sexual life and asked her if she was willing to have a threesome with another girl. And she told me that she'd be willing to try it if I was willing to try it with another guy first.
Yeah, that's a good strategy on her part. Sure, I'll have a threesome. Bring your buddy in. Let's do it. And that she knows you're not going to go for that, and that's her little strategy for making sure of it.
Well,
and, you're 19, Josh. What do you want? Come on.
Well,
relax. Threesome. Whatever. You're 19. That's going to screw up the relationship.
Here's one thing I can tell you definitively about threesomes. It will never be your idea. It will never start because you thought it should start.
I remember
that is 100% the truth.
15, he was asking his girlfriends to do this, and he started then, and they said, I just say
it. Here's the other thing that I know about it. If by some miracle it starts happening, don't do anything to get in the way. Stay back, observe, eventually you'll be called to duty, I promise. Don't do anything to upset the balance or make it stop, because it's such a miracle that it happened. Get out of the way and never suggest it.
So it's sort of like some sort of act of nature where you just stand and behold and
it just
don't
happens.
You might upset the crystals and the environment, and the whole thing might collapse, this delicate structure. No, it's true. It's not something that you should be messed with.
No guy's going to do well suggesting it or trying to plan it. You'll wind up hurting your girlfriend's feelings and getting in trouble.
Absolutely. There will always be resentment. There will always be feelings you don't expect. And if it's a relationship you don't care about, well, that's one thing. But after all, you're 19, and God knows what he's doing to these women that he's exploiting. So I don't know. Phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. Seth Green in here. Robot Chicken. Chris on Family Guy. And the movie list I think everyone's aware of, from Austin Powers, Italian Job. What else? What are you proud of, film-wise?
I love those.
Battle Paddle was great.
Mentioned Party Monster, yeah.
Party Monster.
You know what? I love Battle Paddle. We had so much fun making that movie.
Yeah, I could tell. It looked like a lot of fun. So call in for Seth. Call in for me. Get your questions here on Loveline, and we'll be right back after this short break. Here we go. Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Seth Green is our guest
yes,
tonight.
Yes, sir.
And the first caller here is Joshua, who is 19. Joshua, what's happening?
All right. I've always had this fantasy about any woman who would be willing to do it about being breastfed. And also, I love Seth Green's Robot Chicken and Family Guy.
That is such a collection of sentences I never expected to hear. That was two thoughts I never expected to be strung so seamlessly together.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. No, not at all, dude. Thanks. It's awesome, and I love that you love the show.
I have heard of this fantasy before. I don't know particularly what it means. As with any sort of fetish, it makes me think about a developmental arrest, that something sort of happened to you at that
time.
Were
you breastfed by your mother?
She says that though I was not able to actually nurse from her, I actually did receive some of it when I was, like, little, because I was born, like, 3 months and something weeks premature. I was, like, 30... I think I was like 26 weeks gestation, but either way.
So isn't that interesting that you had no doubt? I mean, we really don't know the full impact on a developing child of what happens when they're in a neonatal intensive care unit and they're sort of in an incubator and on ventilators.
I was also born at 86, and I was one of the first micropremies they were able to save.
Right, and so we don't know the residual effects on this, and it wouldn't surprise me that there'd be certain sort of developmental residuals, like, you know, an
just
enhanced
that,
desire
that connection.
Or
yeah, like the lack of something that you had that's kind of
right.
Basic and always kind of wanting it, and then just building that up in your mind is like the most important and valuable, and that totally makes
sense. If you go back to that little aphorism that I was mentioning earlier, the things that are terrorizing in childhood become very attractive when you hit puberty. There may, you know, maybe being in that ventilator and in that very austere environment was horrible, and you know, you sort of gained an attraction for something that was something to focus on or something that was a natural drive at that time. And it's now kind of stayed fixed.
Yeah, I remember nothing of my childhood from, like, I'd say 1 year old on, pretty much.
Till when?
Till about when? When do you start remembering stuff?
I think I was like maybe 4. I can't really remember specifically enough to really tell you an exact age.
That's normal.
But that's
though.
Common too. Yeah. I don't remember. No, I have like vague flashes of stuff before, you know, 4 or 5 years old. But then my most concrete memories of my childhood are after that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then if definitely. In fact, what happens is the part of your brain that's responsible for memory, it's called the hippocampus, doesn't myelinate until you're about 2-3 years old, which is the
I think there's some people on my campus over drinking, if you get my meaning.
So I don't know what it is, Joshua, but it's not surprising given all the stuff you went through. And so otherwise, you okay?
Yeah, when I was 15, I was living with friends for a couple of years until around that time I was 17, and I endured some physical and emotional abuse at the hands of some friends because the man, I'm not going to give his name because I don't want to go and embarrass him over the radio, but he took and he just either didn't know how to handle raising a boy instead of 2 girls, or he just didn't know how to deal with my mental and medical various things I have as well as being a boy or what, but, you know, so he ended up being a bit physical and emotionally abusive to me.
Who is this guy?
He was
not by name, but he was like his
basically
caretaker.
Basically, he was like my... He was kind of like my adopted dad since I've never seen my biological dad except for like maybe 4 to 6 times. I can't even remember for sure in my life.
And so this was the man your mom was living with?
No, they were not living together at all. He was married to a wife and had 2 daughters of his own. Separately.
Joshua, can you understand my confusion? I'm trying to understand why this guy was in your life.
They were like surrogate parents, basically, helping them.
Why do you have surrogate parents that weren't related to your wife, your mother in any way? Why did you need surrogate parents?
They were like really good. They were like really good friends.
No.
Like,
what? No. I'm sorry, Josh. The question we're trying to ask is like, where was
your mom? Yeah, where was your mom? Why did you have surrogate?
She was breastfeeding the neighbor's kids.
Yes. Okay.
No, she was busy working her butt off trying to raise me and trying to support me and help me through the medical things I had. And
like what? What are your medical problems?
I had hydrocephalus. For a while until like I think I was like 16 or so, I had like take a seizure medication called Neurontin.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a possible Arnold Chiari malformation. I'm not sure what that is.
Hypochondriacus? Does he have?
No. These
Arnold
are real.
Arnold Chiari malformation.
Yeah. Okay.
Hydrocephalus.
Yeah. And so, do you have a shunt in?
Yes, I had 2 of them.
Okay.
I still have
them. All right, so you got a bunch of stuff going on, but all that stuff's quite manageable.
So, but you said you were abused by this guy.
Yes.
This guy who was kind of like a surrogate parent.
Yeah,
they were basically like friends of my mother that my mother, when I was a year old, who basically took and loved me as though I was their son. You know, and they helped my mother out greatly.
Okay.
And I personally attribute it to one of the reasons I'm not gay or anything like that.
You sure?
Oh, stop it.
Pardon?
Hey, Josh, we can figure out and you can find whatever you're looking for on Craigslist, I'm sure, as far as the breastfeeding thing goes.
Nice.
It's true, though.
All right,
I didn't catch that.
You probably didn't want to.
It's on a cell phone.
Don't worry about it. Anyway, Arnold Chiari syndrome is a malformation of the neck, basically, right, the spine?
Mm-hmm. Right. I also have what they call Asperger syndrome.
All right, which is, again, sort of an autistic spectrum. Mm-hmm. This is all, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, so... I think the fact that you have just this little preoccupation is no big deal, and I wouldn't focus on that. There's a lot more to contend with here than just that.
And I would bet you would find somebody who's totally into that as well.
That's true. He seems like a nice guy. Nathan.
Yeah, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, hey.
Hey, first time caller, man. Real big fan of your show. Love it, man. It's my favorite show on the radio.
God bless you. What's happening?
for Seth, man. What's going on, man?
What's going on, Nathan?
Oh, nothing much. Man, I'm kind of nervous.
Don't be.
I was listening to you on Tom Likas one day, and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was thinking about it. Dude, you... you're a good actor, man. I love all your stuff, man. I love what you do, and... That's... I...
Just do it!
Thanks, man.
I really feel like that's what I want to do. You know, I want to do acting, and... I like it how you always... You always take what comes to you and what, you know, you've had a lot of jobs that you've done, you know, like Idle Hands. I love that movie, dude.
Thanks, man.
Is there any, like, tips that you can give me, bro? Like, because, man, that's my number one priority. I want to be an actor.
I mean, that's a good start right there, is making it your priority. And there's all sorts of things that you can do. How old are you?
He's 19.
19, so still at an age where you could go to school, get some training. That's the smartest thing to do, is like educate yourself and study and be in an environment where that stuff is going on, so you can be around it and get familiar with it. And you know, you just can't help, if you're right in the right environments, just being witness to the right things and being in a position to be prepared when opportunity comes your way, you know. And then there's also just making your own opportunity. The older I get, the more I try and like make my own fun, whether it's creating something or producing something or trying to get involved with friends and writing something.
Write your own stuff, exactly.
Yeah, but the smartest thing to do is get educated and spend time around it, whether it's doing extra work or taking a drama course or, you know, going to college for theater. You just you really just bury yourself in it.
Next caller, please.
Okay, this real quick. This is Andy. What's up, Andy?
Hey.
Andy, what's happening? You're on Seth Green.
Hey, what's up, Andy?
Yeah, I'm a real big fan and all that. I just saw the Italian Job with you.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. We had a blast that day.
Yeah. I heard a rumor. Oh, and I'm a big fan of yours, too. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Okay.
I heard a rumor around here. I live in Alaska.
Today, Junior!
And? The rumor is?
That the younger you are, if you have sex, it like, because like, there's these girls that lived across the street from me. I had sex when I was like 7. That was my first time.
That's not sex. That's sexual abuse, buddy.
Oh no,
that is sexual abuse.
Like, they were my age.
It's a lot,
Andy. That's child on child sexual abuse. So know that you were sexually abused. But what's your question?
But it's tough, Drew, because when you spell it out like that, it sounds different. I mean, when I was like in nursery school, we did all sorts of doctor business, and it was really
doctor
just
business
exploration.
Is different than directed sexuality. If you actually are, if there's intercourse, if there's something directed with genital contact, that is because one of the children had been sexually abused by an adult, and then that child will go sexual abuse as other children. That's a very common route. Real quick, Andy, the question is.
Okay. I heard that if you have sex at a young age, your penis will stay that size for a while, and it'll be harder for it to grow.
That's not true.
That's not true. However, if that was what will help young males delay sexual activity, let it stand as fact. Seth Green in here with us. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. That about does it for Loveline and Seth.
So
Green,
easy,
thank you,
Drew.
Again.
So fun.
It's awesome, isn't it? It really is fun.
Nobody even really asks us any questions.
Well, they're talking. Yeah, it's fast. I mean, they talk to you a lot, and
the hardest fastball I got was the show up from summer camp, busted me on my romance letters.
I got to gush a bit, and I really do appreciate you letting me take my kids over. It really is something to behold.
Anytime, man.
Honestly, it's like Disneyland over there. It is an amazing operation. So congratulations and good luck on your vacation this summer and any future projects. And don't be a stranger around here. Right?
I'll see you when you get back to town.
Will do.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, y'all, and stay well.
See, this kind of surgery too, they can do for decrease the size of my penis.
Seth?
That sounds like a fool's task.